I was a little late there, but welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm making it through the week, and it's only a Tuesday, but we're here, and I'm so excited. So how are you doing, Beck?
I am here. I am alive. I'm excited to be a part of the podcast.
Good to have you.
Well, yeah, we have another fun guest episode today. This time, one of our fellow Blades for Hire anthology authors and author of many other stories, Blades for Hire. Bex, I just mixed your name up with the anthology title. I am so sorry. Bex, yeah. Gill, her name is not Blades for Hire. I'm so sorry that it's been a long week already.
That would be a dope name, though. That would be pretty baller.
I would question your parents, but yeah, it would still be pretty cool. But yeah, we have another fun guest interview for you guys today. Hopefully, I don't make too many more blunders, but you guys should be used to it by now, so it's okay.
A good one of those days.
Yeah, for real. But one of the first thing we like to start with, Bex, is a little bit of a reading update. So we like to tell the audience what books we're currently reading. If anything, sometimes we're not reading anything because life is like that sometimes. But Ash, I'll let you kick it off. What are you currently reading?
I am still working through Babel very slowly. The holiday season just is one of those seasons for everybody. So doing a little less reading, but Babel. And then I am rereading A Court of Silver Flames from my book club, which is always just a fun, stupid read to just read and not have to pay attention to. So that's what I'm reading. Brandon, what are you reading?
I am wrapping up, I think I said I was reading Last Argument of Kings like several episodes ago, and I never finished it, so I'm finishing that, and then I'm going to start, I think I'm going to start Stormlight, just because all the excitement around Wind and Truth has got me like really motivated to start it, so I think I'm going to dive into that. Also, this is a really weird thing to say, but when there's like such a massive book in the series, it just makes me want to read it more. That was one of the driving forces that pushed me into A Song of Ice and Fire. So seeing Wind and Truth is like 1400 almost pages, just I don't know, it must just be like I want to climb the mountain, you know, like the challenge of
the
it.
The challenge, but yeah, for sure.
What about you, Bex? What are you currently reading, if anything? I know the holidays are pretty busy, but
I'm not currently reading anything because I'm busy writing, but my last book that I read was finishing up the Red Rising trilogy. I like binge read that back to back. It'll be one of my favorite trilogies of all time. Just books, each one amazing. It just kept getting better and better. Big fan, very fast paced, which is I admittedly really need because I will admit social media has ruined my attention span.
Yes.
And then my next read is most likely going to be The Girl Who Fell Beneath the Sea by Axiom, because I'm also writing Korean fantasy, so wanted to read hers and kind of see how she did stuff.
Love it.
Very cool. I did see some of your like reaction videos, I think, or posts about Red Rising, and that added it to my TBR, but I haven't gotten to it yet. There's still so many books to get to, but it sounds like a really fun read from all your...
It got me interested in sci-fi again. It's so good.
Reignited that fire. I love when that happens. You're like, oh, actually, yeah, okay, I want to read more.
For sure. I used to be big into sci-fi when I was like in middle school and high school. And then lately, though, as an adult, I've been like solely fantasy and like some historical fiction, historical romance. So that was like, yeah, reignited that sci-fi fire.
Love it. That's awesome.
Very cool. Well, I have a few podcast updates to get into real quick, and then we'll go into one indie release spotlight that we have, and then move into our topics of discussion for the day. But as you guys know, I say it every week, we have the guest form now live in our link tree. So if you would like to be a guest on Quill and Query, we would love to have you. Just fill out the guest form, and we will send you more details. We'll be in touch, but especially if you have like an upcoming release, we'd love to help you market a little bit. And then if you're following me on socials and Bex and Ash, you've probably seen that the Blades for Hire anthology that we've been discussing for about a year now, we finally announced a release date. So we selected February 25th, 2025. So nice and easy to remember, but just follow us for updates. If you don't know what the Blades for Hire anthology is, it is a collection of fantasy short stories all themed around mercenaries, hence the title. But yeah, it's super excited. We've been working for a long time, and there's a lot of really good stories in there. So hope you'll check it out. And all the proceeds will be going to a charity named Book Trust, which is aimed at improving literacy in children around the world. So you can read some good stories and support a good cause at the same time. So stay tuned for more info on that. Like I said, all three of us here are contributing authors. So we're going to get into that a little bit later, but I'm actually going to skip this next update. Ash, do you want to touch on this one, or should we? Sorry, I should have checked with you before the show. But
no, that's okay. I think we'll probably give more details closer to the new year. But just so everyone knows that the TikTok preemptive ban discussion is happening, we're going to do what we can to make sure that we kind of keep this ball rolling as much as we can. But we are working on a solid plan. So don't fret. If this is your favorite podcast, which it should be, we are going to make sure that we have a plan going forward, so that's the briefest update I can give on that. How did I do with that one?
You did good. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I didn't want to speak for both of us.
No, that's okay. I know we were chatting about it, so I'm like, just know we're discussing it, and it's not like it's going to be a surprise for anybody.
Yeah, Mandy's right. Better be your favorite podcast, and if it's not, tell us what we can do to fix that.
There you go.
No audience questions this week, and I only have one indie book released to spotlight. This one actually came out yesterday. It is called To Break a Curse. This is by J.D. Pierce. So if you need a new read, go check that one out. It's out now. I'm assuming it's on Amazon, like most books are. But yeah, those are all our podcast updates. With that said, now we're going to move into the next kind of recurring segment, Bex, that we have, which is our work in progress check-in. So it sounded like you are in the middle of some writing, so you should be able to participate here, but we just like to share a little bit of a update on our current projects. If we've made any progress, we've made it a kind of a big point on the show to be transparent when we just aren't making much progress with our writing, because we think that's pretty important to share the low points. But as for myself, I'm just doing a lot of rewrites on my debut, A Knight of Knives. I'm tweaking the outline a bit, not a lot, but what I'm actually doing is making the story longer, just because I didn't like some of the pacing, and there were some events that I kind of wanted to add into that to kind of improve on like the buildup of certain plot points and things like that. And then of course I'm wrapping up the edits for Blades for Hire, since that'll be out in February. But that is my very brief writing update. So Ash, I'll let you go next. What has your writing progress looked like these past few weeks?
It's just been editing land.
Yeah.
I haven't written a darn thing for A Filthy Hunger in months, just because I've been focused on this. It's been good, though, to take a break a bit from the project to reevaluate how I need to move forward with it. The new year always brings lots of, like, anticipatory stuff, but it's kind of like, all right, I just need to work on my outlining. So that is the new year goal, is to outline better. But yeah, just edits. Just truly, you don't want to see how much I have ruined each page. Everyone's comments were so great, so I'm just like, oh yeah, I gotta fix that. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing. What about you, Bex?
Outlining, who is she?
We don't know her. We're trying to know her, though. We're trying to know her very well.
Actually, sorry, super short side tangent. I really love and think it's good for authors to try different things. Even if you think you'll hate outlining, try it at least once. If you think you really hate pantsing, I think you should try it at least once. Because I did try outlining and I worked my way into really bad writer's block. But now I know it's not for me.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, but I wish I could. I feel like that's also why I tend to write very short series, shorter books, because I do pants. And I feel like I do care about consistency and not having plot holes. And I can't imagine doing like 7 books of pantsing. I'm like, that would be so hard.
There's a fine balance. Yeah, no, most definitely.
Yeah, right now I am currently working on I like to call it a Korean Beauty and the Beast romantasy, kind of like ACOTAR, but instead of more of like the Western European like fae, it's going to be a lot of like Korean mythological creatures, which I'm really cool to kind of like introduce to, you know, people who are not familiar with it. There's a lot of cool mythological creatures in East Asia. And so far, one of my favorites is called, just a little sneak peek, it's called Mudosa. And it's the top half is a cat and the bottom half is a snake, and they're neutral/friendly. If you feed them, they will do a favor for you later. So that's like my favorite thing. So yeah, I'm working on that. I need to do one final read through of my Blades for Hire short story. I did all the edits and I kind of just haven't done anything because I feel like I'm done with it. It's really short, so there wasn't a lot to do. Yeah. So I mostly need to do one last read through and submit that. And yeah, that's kind of how things are right now.
But well, you did, to your credit, you did finish before, I think, all of us. So you have had a lot more time to edit. So
yeah.
I didn't really know if you had any more editing to do, if I'm being honest, but
the
time is there.
Ash did point out like a good, I think she gave one of like the, found like the one plot hole that somehow I feel like the rest of us missed. Even I missed. And I wrote the dang thing.
Dang.
And so I did fix it and that was it. And yeah, everything else was like not really much to do, but it's also super short. I think I have the shortest story in the whole anthology.
That's okay though. I like having the variety.
I was going to say like mine is like 40 pages. So you... It's short, long, medium. It's got stories for everybody, which is how we should advertise some of that stuff. Like,
right.
You like short? You got short. You got long? You got long. So
we got happy. We got sad. We have it all, baby.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Something for everybody. All right. Well, we're going to move into some icebreaker topic specs. We like to do these before we get into the actual like interview questions. They're still kind of formatted like questions, but we like to label them differently. Okay, so.
More conversational.
The first.
Less listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this first one I have for you. So correct me if I'm wrong, but based on what I've seen on your socials and stuff, you've definitely seen a lot of the world outside of your writing desk. So naturally, I would assume that carries into your writing. And I know it does based on my experiences reading in. But we'll dive into that in a little bit. But I want to hear, what is your favorite travel experience or memory or place you've been to or thing you did? Kind of just a broad question, but give me some of your favorite experiences.
Gosh, I have not traveled to a lot of countries. I've only been to, I think, a total of like four, which is more than a lot of people. I don't want to be like, you know, I realize that was a big honor and blessing to be able to have those experiences, but not like I'm traveling every summer to a new country either. But I feel like the countries I did get to go to were very, it was very unique experience. Like, so I got to go to Iraq twice, and that was definitely one of my favorites and also really difficult in sometimes because I was going there because my parents were helping the victims of ISIS. And so although I did get to do like a day of like, you know, sightseeing, I was also going to the IDP camps and the refugee camps. So it was, you know, really incredible and emotional experience, very unique. But what I did love about it was during those touring is getting to see the beauty of Northern Iraq. And I feel like, you know, we often think of in the Middle East, you often just hear like about wars and conflict, but there really is a lot of beauty to it, beauty to the landscape and to the people and to the resilience of the people having to go through a lot of hard things. And so I really loved, we got to see like really old buildings and architecture and artifacts, and that was like really incredible. And yeah, it was just a really cool experience. And I feel like sometimes if my family's kind of weird. Like I've grown up always like my parents volunteering and like I would obviously go with them as, you know, when I was young to help refugees and stuff. So I feel like I've been around a lot of like multiculturalness my whole life. So I feel like it's so normal to me. But then I'll very casually drop. I was like, oh yeah, I went to Iraq and, you know, and ISIS was like still in the mountains or whatever, you know, and there were bombs, the threats of bombs or something. And it's like so normal. And doesn't feel like a big deal. But when I tell people and then I see their reactions, I'm like, oh, that is kind of unique.
It is, I would say, very much unique in that regard.
Yeah. And then I lived in South Korea for almost a total of like 3 years. And that was also really beautiful country full of really rich history as well. And just, I love learning languages. I love learning cultures. It was my major, international studies. I loved it so much. I majored in it. So all of those things, like just meeting people and hearing their stories and seeing like, you know, old architecture, old artifacts definitely has come into play when it comes to like world building or finding stories that I want to tell. Sorry.
Yeah,
I can keep talking about this forever. So I got to cut myself off eventually.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think evident by the chat is you've seen, like, I know you said it's not a lot of countries, but you've still seen more of the world than a lot of people. And so that's really cool. It sounds like you've had a lot of very positive and some eye-opening experiences as well. And I can testify to the the Middle East thing too, because I haven't been there, but I've met lots of refugees from Iraq, and a lot of close friends of mine are from that area. So I can agree with, like, you know, the beautiful culture, and the people have such interesting stories, and very some of them very heartbreaking. But no, it's a really interesting region of the world that I would like to visit someday.
I would definitely recommend.
Sorry, I had a TikTok overlay that came up. I was making sure we were still live.
That's okay. I've been having like some
issues. You're good. With mine. Also, I don't know if I'm supposed to ask questions, but I'm curious, like, if you guys have traveled outside the U.S. at all yourselves.
Yeah, this, like I said, and like Ash said, these are kind of icebreaker topics, so we'll just go back and forth. It's not really formal structure. Ash, I'll let you take this one first. Have you been outside of the country?
The nature of my dad's job lent me to move a lot. So I lived in Japan for a big chunk of my life and visited a few times again as an adult. And then I lived with a family in London for a few months, for a semester of school, and then traveled a bunch there. Nowhere Middle Eastern I would like to go. But yeah, so I've definitely traveled. Travel's one of my favorite things in the world. Oh, and I went to Austria and Germany this year. I forgot about that.
Very cool.
Yeah, travel is like an integral part of who I am. I find like I write really great stuff when I travel. I don't know, the mindset is you're open to new experiences and you're already out of your comfort zone. So you mm-hmm. tend to just push the limits of your own kind of writing style, I think, when you do that. So yeah. What about you, Brandon? Have you traveled?
Sorry, well, you mentioned Japan, and I immediately looked down because River, I don't know how familiar you guys are with River, but she is in the chat on TikTok, and I know she loves Japan. She loves Japan, learning Japanese.
Let me know. Hell yeah. It's one of my favorite places. I could doubt, like, if someone were like, hey, we will pay for you to live there, I'd be like, yeah, 100%. Like, I'm going. Bye. See ya.
Yeah, I've been following River's content more and more recently because of her. I'm not gonna share your video content here, but just because we have similar medical struggles, so yeah, it's interesting to watch it because it's a rare condition that I haven't seen represented much on social media, so her videos are a nice source of comfort in that regard. But you guys make me feel like an amateur now when it comes to travel, because I've only been to two countries outside of the U.S. One is Jamaica. I went there on a cruise when I was 15. It was a beautiful place where we went. The people were super nice. Yeah, I didn't get to spend as much time there as I wanted to. It was just like a few hours, but still loved it. Would definitely go back. The other place I've been to, I've spent 3 weeks in Australia in the Sydney area. Also loved it. I just love visiting new places outside of my immediate surroundings because I'm very much a homebody. Like, I will stay home most of the time. I don't even like driving downtown. That's mostly due to the traffic. But like when I'm ready to get out, I like to go far away, you know? So, but yeah, I have to hit some of the places that you guys mentioned because they sound very fun to explore.
We'll say the other two countries I've been to is Canada and Mexico. So like not as, you know, exciting. Yeah. I feel like those are kind of like the basic ones for North America because we're connected.
I have been to Canada. I just always forget to include that one.
Right. It doesn't really feel like you went anywhere.
I don't live there anymore, but I used to live in New York, and where I lived in New York was very upstate, and it was only an hour away from the Canadian border. So it's just local to me up there. It's not a different country, but yeah.
It's actually my goal with my boyfriend this year to travel more inside the US to places mm-hmm. that, like, I don't know. I think we forget that the U.S. is so friggin' massive and that, sure, we can't assume that we all speak the same language when we do go these places. But like, yeah, I don't know. There's something worth exploring about your own country as well, especially one as big as the U.S. that I'm trying to also do more. Like, it doesn't have to be so exotic, even if it's like a weekend trip somewhere. It's like that still counts as getting out and traveling, in my opinion. I'm trying to do more of that.
Oh, 100%. Because Korea is like so tiny and the climate, the terrain is like the same. I mean, there's like a bit colder, a bit more like warmer-ishness happening. But overall, like it's very mountainous, lots of trees. Mm-hmm. It's like very the same wherever you go. So, but in versus America, it's so huge.
Yeah.
You know, we have all these different climates and mm-hmm. different types of forests and mountains, deserts. And so, yeah, it is pretty incredible what you can discover just traveling within our own country.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you want to pick the next icebreaker topic since I went first?
Yeah. I'm actually going to ask this question. It's not the second question on the list. It's the third question. So I want to know about your hobbies, the things that you turn to when you need a break from writing. Because if I know you, you draw and create your own works for your novels, correct? So is this a part of the whole? Did you start doing art because of the books, or did you do art before the book? Like, what? Talk to us about hobbies and art.
Yes, drawing is one of my favorite hobbies to do. And I love it because, I have a chronic illness, and part of that includes I get really bad brain fog sometimes. And so actually a difficulty with my writing with this current WIP was I have not written for the past week and a half at all, because my brain fog was so bad. And it's such a hard thing to describe if you don't experience it, but it's literally like, imagine you're trying to walk with a big heavy backpack full of all your school textbooks in a swamp, and the mud is sucking your feet, and you just can't make any progress no matter how hard you try. Like, your brain just can't think of things properly. It's so hard. So I actually, even though I met my NaNoWriMo goals, as soon as that ended, it was just nothing. I just could not do it. And so what I've been doing during this time is drawing, because I can draw. I'm very thankful to the Lord that I can draw even when I can't write. So I have been doing a lot of drawing, trying to get better and learn and develop that skill. And I've always drawn since I was a child, right? I think we all draw as kids, and some people continue to do it throughout their life and others don't. But I continue to do it, and I always would doodle, and it would actually help me while in class. I would just doodle, and it helped me remember things and actually pay attention. And then later I realized I had ADD. And so I just love drawing. I only ever took one semester class in eighth grade for art. And that's the entirety of my official learning of art. And the rest was just kind of figuring it out. So yeah, I stopped for a while when I was in university because I was just busy. And then when I was in Korea, because the Korean work culture consumes a lot of your life, I just was too busy to really do that. But then since coming back to the US with my husband, I started picking up drawing again, and specifically learning digital drawing. And the digital drawing was definitely for the sake of books. I know you can do traditional drawing and do it in a way where you can still use it and print it. I just don't know how to do that. And it's just way easier to do digital if you want to incorporate it into covers and books and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've started really diving back into drawing too, because, I am broke, so I can't afford to commission anyone, and I will never, ever use Gen AI for my art. And so I was I just gotta learn how to do it, gotta get better at it. And so I started everyone else does. I started with tracing, not other people's art, but just photos of people. And so I started with that, and then I got over that and went to the next step of just drawing on my own. And that's where I am now, and slowly incorporating new skills. And thank you, River. She said she loved my Bound to the Tyrant King cover, which I have right here to show. So yeah, I drew these. It's a joke that artists really hate doing hands, but I actually really love doing hands.
They are my favorite thing to draw also.
Thank you.
My sketchbook is mostly hands, because it's the one thing that was so hard when I was teaching myself, that I was I'm going to master this. And I didn't master it, but it is now. Don't make me draw feet. I could never.
I struggle, I feel more with doing both eyes. I always want to cover one eye. That's more than hands. I can draw both hands, but the eye, I'm got to cover one, got to make it a profile and hide it. Just something.
Is it because it's really hard to make them look like they're on the same face or proportionate?
Yeah. Personally, it's if they're too close together, too wide apart, it throws off the symmetry of the face, So And making sure they're the right size. I feel one pupil or iris is always off from the other, and they look like they have a lazy eye. So yeah. Then
the three-fourths profile, and that's good enough for me. Yep.
What I do love about digital art is the copy and paste tool. So I actually just posted a story of my Ahsoka Tano drawing that I just finished, and her eyes, I drew one eye and copy and pasted and flipped it because I was not doing another.
Yep.
Yeah.
Work smarter, not harder.
I did see the Ahsoka art, and I have to say it was like, it's been really fun to watch from when you started first posting your drawings to like now. Like I mean, I've always thought you did a good job, but the progress has been insane to me because that Ahsoka art, I had to double check that it was you that posted it because I thought it was like a different art account that I followed. Not saying because I didn't think you could do it, but I was like, wait a minute, you've gotten so good. And you do really good art for your books as well, like Bound to the Tyrant King. You had a special hardcover. I don't know if it's just the normal hardcover, but I really liked the cover you did for that. And then the formatting on the inside as well was really nice.
Thanks.
You've definitely really, you can see the effort that you've put into learning all of those skills. And I admire that you've taken the time to learn them and not, you know, used generative AI as a shortcut or anything. I think it's really cool to watch.
Thank you. I know I'd love to offer commissions one day for people. I don't feel confident enough yet in my skills to offer them, but hopefully maybe next year I can do that.
You won't know until you do it, I will say. Like, that is the one thing. I still sketch every now and then, but it's not something I do as often anymore. And I lost my Apple Pen, so I can't do digital art. I have to save up for the new gen of the Apple Pen.
No.
But anyway, I had like a lot of people reach out and be like, hey, would you be able to like draw this for me without me even prompting? So just, I would say do it. I mean, who, you never know. There's like someone out there who's like, I can only dream of having my book drawn by somebody, and you're that person. So yeah, do it.
Yeah, it's more of I want to make sure I can do multiple things. Like, so I'm slowly trying to like try out new things. Like I started just people. And then I slowly started trying to do some sort of background environment. And now I'm trying to do more like accessories and like trying to slowly next on my list is weapons and armor. I really want to get down those. Yeah, no, reflective surfaces are so hard.
Yeah.
So that's like just slowly trying to incorporate those. And then once I feel like I can do a variety. So if someone is like, I want a person with like a knight and a dragon, I'm like, okay, I can do those things. So sure. Just slowly working up my way there. But writing is still my main thing, and art is like the side thing.
Love it. Brandon, what are your hobbies before we move on to the official questions? Do you
have I think I'm pretty open about like video games are a major time sink of mine. That's a big one. This isn't really a hobby, but as far as things that take up my time outside of writing, I have a lot of siblings in a big family. And so typically 3 out of 7 days of the week after work, I'm doing something with one of them. Yeah. So
I think socializing is a hobby because that's my favorite hobby to do. People be like, can you hang out tonight? I'm like, yeah, 100%. I had things to do. Not anymore. We're hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I spend a lot of time with family. I play games. That's another thing that I connect with my family on too. Like I have 4 brothers, so we all play games together and things like that. I did until recently do a lot of digital art, but I don't have my drawing tablet anymore. And so I'm probably a little rusty. I need to get back into that. And I've never really publicly shared any of like the digital drawings I've done. So I would like to do that at some point, but
share it, everybody.
Campaign.
In the comments, peer pressure him. Share it, Brandon.
2025's goal is for Brandon to share his art.
We'll see.
I would love to see it. I love art. It's so cool. Just different ways of expressing stories.
Yeah. And then, Ash, as you know, I recently became a dog parent. So
you did.
She takes up a lot of my time. I take her for exercise every day, get her, make sure she gets her walk in, and then she will chase the tennis ball for hours. So
yeah, that endless puppy energy. I wish I could siphon it and then bottle it and then take it for myself.
Big mood.
Thanks for joining, Mandy, and thank you everybody. Bye, so far Mandy. For all the likes. Wow, 2.3. yeah, thank you guys, lots of likes today. All right, well, I think we can go ahead. Yeah,
because Bex is here and everyone loves Bex.
Guilty as charged.
All right, well, I think we can go ahead and move into the interview questions, Ash. So let me scroll to that.
Also, this is my anxiety talking, so maybe you guys haven't thought this, but I promise I know how to have a normal conversation where I ask questions back. I'm just afraid of like overstepping or going over the time by like keep asking about things. So no, please don't. Forgive me.
No, please don't. No, so this is usually how we do it. We're also new to the interview process. Like, you're our third guest. So this is very much, we are just friends chatting. The next few questions for like the rest of the hour are going to be more aimed at you and your process. So you can wax poetic as long as you want. And there's no obligation for the interview section to then ask us those questions. Where we've had episodes where we've talked about these things. So, you know, it's all you, girl. So don't stress about it.
The little anxiety gremlin is like, you're a terrible person. You don't know how to show interest in others.
You're totally fine. This is all you.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, all new to this. So it's not like super formal. Don't worry about any of that. But yeah, I'll kick us off with the first question here. So I have to adjust how I ask this one a little bit. Because usually I ask about a specific book, but you have many. You are a very prolific indie author already. So give us a little bit of an overview of your novel catalog, and then your writing experience prior to becoming an indie author, prior to Throne of Anguish, your first novel.
Okay. I think I'm going to start with the previous experience and work that way. I didn't really have much writing experience. I mean, I've always, on top of always drawing, I always actually wrote, but I actually wrote poetry. I never did creative writing, like stories, until I took one creative writing class my sophomore year of high school. And then that forced me to do we had to write like a short story. And so that was my first time ever doing anything like narrative type writing. It was always just poetry. Which is ironic because my narrative novel writing style is not poetic to me. They're like two separate things, and all the lyricism goes to my poetry, and I have a much more simple style for my novels. Throne of Anguish was my first book. I don't have like any trunk manuscripts, strung novels. That is the first book I ever tried to write, and I wanted to publish it before I finished high school. That was the original goal because I was a very ambitious person. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to then publish it by the time I'm done with university. Never did that. And then I finally came around to it. So yeah, it was my first one. But I wrote half of it in high school. Half of that book was already done. So I did get to kind of finish faster because half of it was already done. Kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Throne of Anguish is my first book. Yeah, it was very much, it was inspired by a few different things. I was inspired by Avatar The Last Airbender, because I love elemental magic, and I love Zuko, Katara, Aang, honestly everybody. They all just have my heart. And then Throne of Glass, because in high school is when I started reading Throne of Glass. And so, you know, Throne of Anguish, you can kind of see where it's going. But also it's like very different. There are no fae. There is no fae happening. So, like, don't expect the same thing. It is still quite different, just inspired. So, yeah, I wrote this, and I'm glad I'd never published it in high school because it definitely wasn't ready. My writing, my life experience, all of that was not ready. So when I came back to it, I was still young. I was 23, right? But I had been through a lot more, and so I really wanted to incorporate all of those experiences, the good and the bad in there, and share that in a way of kind of like, to me, this book was like an older sister talking to a younger sister. Like if I was in college age and talking to my high school sister, like these are some of like the messages I want to impart to you and encourage you in. And you may have experience, or you might experience these kind of harsh things in life, and I want you to like be equipped when you come upon those experiences. And so that was kind of the goal for that one. And then Crown of Sorrows is the sequel to the duology. And then this one, I had a very big purpose of wanting to share my experience of getting a chronic illness and dealing with that, and how that wrestling chronic illness with my faith, and just encouraging other people, whether you're a Christian or not, anyone who has suffered can really relate to those feelings at their core of, you know, feeling betrayed by your body, being jealous of others for having normal bodies, you know, they're not in pain and they get to live life while I feel like stuck. So really wanting to just encourage people by just sharing my own pain. Not even like I can fix this pain for you, but more of like I'm right there next to you. I wanted to write characters who are like, I don't have the answers, but I'm there with you. we'll cry together, I'll carry you when you can't walk, that type of feeling is what I really wanted to try and capture for this duology. It's just like friends who are going to be there with you. So yeah, that was my first duology. And then I can't believe how much I wrote. Man, it was such a daze the last year. This is Daughters of the Sun, which is a novella. Look at this. It's so, I don't know if you'll be able to see it on my camera. There it is. It's pretty big words. So really great if you have bad eyesight.
There we go.
But this was inspired by the female Peshmerga fighters who fought ISIS, and they just it was a mixture of like stories of the Yazidi people and the Kurdish people that I had heard, you know, from my parents helping them in Northern Iraq, and then also some like news articles and mixing those things together to just try and like bring attention to them, because especially the Yazidi people were not often like talked about. And, you know, I don't blame people for this. This is human nature. Like, we all are like trying to just survive our own lives, right? So I don't like hold it against people when they can't care about every single thing happening in the world. There's always so much happening and so much suffering in the world. But I just wanted to write something that if you did want to kind of dip your toes into this people group, this ethno-religious minority, then that you could do that. And you know, fantasy is a way of exploring things in a less confrontational way. And so I wanted to provide like a way to be exposed to this people group and this, you know, pretty recent world issue, but through a fantastical lens, because I don't know how to write fiction. I said fiction. I don't know how to write nonfiction. I can only write fiction. I only know how to write fiction. So this is the best I could do to honor them and bring some attention to them. So yeah. And then, last but not least, we have Bound to the Tyrant King, which is Korean historical romance. It is very much like leaning to the historical romance, not like historical fiction side. It is a fictional king and queen, and it's in like a time range, not even like a specific year, but just really inspired by my love of Korean history and culture and Korean dramas. And I really explored the idea of also like factions and how much factions played a role in Korean history. And that was kind of the basis of this. And yeah, I have one more thing that I don't have a physical copy of because it's a short story called The River Sings for You. And it's a short story I wrote for the Kindle Vella Vellies contest. And then since Kindle Vella is shutting down, I just formatted it into like an ebook free short story that's available on my website. So for anyone to grab. There you go.
Well, I'll give you
and
a break
you've
for
got
a
the
second
short thing. Story. And you've got the anthology short story.
That's right.
Yes, I do. Everyone check out Blades for Hire coming February 20th.
All right. Thanks, River, for joining.
Bye, River.
Oh, bye, River.
Yeah, no, you've put out a lot of writing over this past year. I'm very jealous that you can write so fast, but I love...
They are shorter books, to be fair. I'm not writing like 200-word tomes. None of them have reached 100,000 words, so I am on the short side of writing.
Still, though, it's a great achievement, and I've loved all the ones I've read so far. I have not gotten to Bound to the Tyrant King or the Daughters of the Sun, but I will check out The River Sings for You. I did not know that was...
Yeah, I didn't know
available outside of Vella anymore, so I will check that out.
To be
right
fair,
after this.
I only mentioned it one in an Instagram story, so I'm not shocked nobody knows. I'll make an actual post about it later and like pin it for people.
Yeah. Yeah, it can't hurt.
That's a good idea.
I also just have like severe ADHD where like I'll be scrolling usually like at work or something and be like, okay, I'll check that out after work, and then I'd never get to it. So yeah. It skips my mind.
Very relatable.
But yeah, awesome catalog of books there. I think we touched a little bit on your inspiration, so I think we can go ahead and skip that question, because we did talk a little bit about like what themes you wanted to touch on in your writing and what inspired you to write these books. But I'm going to let Ash go ahead and pick one of the next or the next question to ask, since we're going to go ahead and skip that one.
Yeah,
Ash, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think I think the natural progression of the next question has to be what your writing process is like, because to write so much in such a short amount of time, have you like honed in on a style of writing and how you write? Like, walk us through what a process of writing a novel looks like to you.
Sure. First, I want to give the disclaimer of, because, you know, it's really easy to compare ourselves to other people. But everyone's circumstances are different. So for me, I am like currently unemployed due to my chronic illness. So even though I am in pain every day, I still am home every day and I don't have any kids. I am married and I have a dog, but no kids. So I really don't have a lot of like other responsibilities to do other than feed myself and my dog. So, you know, I'm going to have more time on my hands than a parent or someone with a full-time job who's, you know, grinding on the indie author side of things after work. So, you know, don't compare yourself. We all have different circumstances going on, but I definitely have kind of found my groove on like how I like to do things now. The first book was rough. I had no idea what I was doing. I was trying to read all the blogs possible, you know, trying to figure out marketing while simultaneously figuring out how to write and format and edit. So it was a lot. And also I designed my own covers. So I was like trying to practice like the first like 15 covers or so that I made for Throne of Anguish will like never be seen. I actually should make a post about it to show people like
you should. I feel like that's actually really great. Like, hey guys, this is how long it took me to figure out my very first, you know, I feel like that's always fun and like relevant too, to let other people know like, yeah, it's going to take a few renditions.
For sure, because I think we often see the result and not like the time and path it took to get there. And so we're comparing ourselves to the end product and not the road and the journey. Because, yeah, like the first five just were absolutely garbage. They were so bad. And then other ones were like, well, if the blurb is good enough, I'm okay with this cover and slowly getting better to what my final product was. So, yeah, I think that's good to help encourage people, you know. Everything takes time. You're not born with the media skills. So yeah, but now I have a pretty good process for writing. I always start with usually like, I feel like I form my characters first, like my, like who, and then I go on to kind of like, okay, like what, like how, what kind of message do I want to use? And I usually am always like, how can I encourage somebody? And so like, you'll always find, the thing I'm very passionate about usually is chronic illness, disability, mental health, incorporating all those in every single novel and every story that I write. And so for, you know, I'm always like thinking, okay, like, and obviously if you're including a disability, that's going to affect your characterization because depending on the disability, some are a lot more like, you know, life affecting and, you know, versus higher functioning and everything. But I usually just write, I start with the characters, start with like the general idea and the story, kind of like almost like that pitch, that tagline is like what forms first. And then I just write whenever I feel like writing. It's really, I really
You're
write.
Like a pantser. Are you like a full pantser?
Like, I feel like it depends who you ask on like what qualifies, but I would say I'm like 90% pantser. Because the only plotting I do is like, okay, this is where they start. I know they need to end here. Everything in between is up in the air and for whatever mood I feel like I'm in. So I definitely would consider myself a pantser. I'll like, okay, I'm going to write like something in the second act today. Going to go back to the first. Going to go to the last. I'm going to stay in the last a little while. Now let's go back to the front. Literally whatever. And then that's like I basically write all the main moments, whether that's like main important conversations between characters, main like conflict and battles, or you know, I write all those and then I just start like it's like a puzzle piece. Like I've created my little puzzle pieces and I need to put them all in order, all in like the chapters, need to fill them out into full scenes, full chapters, because like something can be as short as like it's two paragraphs and it's kind of like my ADD way of being like, okay, don't forget this part, and then I'll flesh it out later. And yeah, so far it's worked out all right, but that's also why I feel like I wouldn't be so good with like a long series, because I don't plan out ahead. Like all, like most of my foreshadowing has to come in the revision stage and make sure I like put it in, and I'm not really like, you know, good at planning things out, and it just kind of like takes the fun away from me. Like, I'm the same way with my drawing. I don't actually like to sketch before I draw. I tried doing that and I just hated it so much. And so now I don't sketch anymore. I do like the blocking, like the big colors, like blocking out, and then like slowly add details like that. It has a special name that I don't remember, but so it's funny. It's very similar. My writing and my drawing are very similar in that sense of just kind of start writing, start drawing and see what happens. And hopefully it doesn't suck.
Is the drawing method, is it thumbnail sketching?
I've never heard of that, actually. I mean, I don't... It was something like because, French.
Sorry. Okay.
Sorry.
No, I was just saying, I was wondering if that was it, because that was a technique I used in like concept art, was thumbnail sketching. So you use like black, gray, and white for your background, foreground, and middle ground elements, and you just kind of block out the stuff. You time yourself. You do like, I got 60 seconds to create the basic shapes of what I'm going to actually spend the next 3 hours drawing. So it just sounded familiar, but it might be slightly different.
I think it's slightly different, but basically the same concept, maybe just like slightly tweaked a bit. But yeah, I just block out whatever and just kind of go from there. And so, yeah, the same with my writing. I'm just like, okay, let's just do these things. And then you slowly add in the details. Mm-hmm. And it's the slowest process for me, like piecing together, because I usually have to like reread everything to figure out where it needs to go. And then, yeah, just fleshing it out and like, the hardest part for me is like those quiet moments in books are the hardest, and like transitions Same. Are really hard. I'm like, I was born to be like a director, because I'm like, give me that cut, just black cut, next scene. Who needs transitions?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Well, we touched on your writing process a little bit, so let's move over to the less fun side, the publishing and the marketing processes. Just talk us through what your publishing process looked like, maybe for your first novel, and then maybe how you evolved that over your like subsequent releases. And then what goals did you set for yourself and with the release of each book, and did you achieve those goals?
Yeah, I definitely did things differently from Throne of Anguish to, you know, versus Bound to the Tyrant King. Learned a lot between those two. Publishing processes, what's funny, one of the things I actually start with usually almost always is a book cover. The book cover always is like almost always, not almost always, so far it has always come before the story. I do the book cover, and then it also is like a good thing to like keep in my mind. I'm like, okay, that's the final product, so like work, push through, that's what you're working towards. So I always, yeah, and for making covers, you know, I do a lot of like research and try and like look at what's trending within like not just genres but subgenres, and like make it according to that. And let's see, I write, do my self-editing, then betas, then revisions, and then more revisions. Then I always format with Atticus. I love Atticus. I know a lot of people don't like it. I'm sure if I got used to like other ones and I had the money to try the other ones out, maybe I'd like them. But I think Atticus is a great bang for your buck. It gets the job done. It's pretty easy for me to use. And so I format through that. Then I personally use KDP and Ingram Spark. I am a personal hater of Ingram Spark, but I find them a necessary, like, evil.
Necessary evil, yeah.
And I, like, as soon as, like, someone can offer the distribution of, like, Ingram Spark with dust jackets that does not require an upload fee, an initial upload fee, because, like, Book Vault does distribute, but they have an upload fee. And for someone like myself, I just genuinely like can't afford that. So I do KDP, and I did buy a pack of 10 ISBNs at the beginning, because like that's just like what all the internet like advice was. It's like, you have to buy your ISBNs. I kind of regret doing that. because truthfully, like, most of my sales are ebook and paperback. Like 99% of my sales are through KDP. Half of my like money that I get is from KU, so not even like going wide with ebooks. I could have just gone exclusive like KDP and used their free ISBNs, But side note for anyone listening, if you are a, oh, hi, Ruth. If you're a spicy author, I do think it's a good idea to get your ISBNs because I feel like they have the hardest time with banning issues with KDP. They seem to be like the ones KDP comes down on. So, you know, just an FYI there. But I don't include spice, so I feel like I'm like safer. And I also try to like really pay attention to KDP rules. And I'm so happy I found out that your subtitle is technically supposed to be on your front cover because a lot of people don't do that. But it is in the KDP rules that if you have a subtitle, it needs to be on the front cover of your paperback. And a lot of people don't put it on their paperback. And they don't get any issues, but it is technically against the rules. And some people do get issues, like they'll get message like you're at threat of ban because you're like, there's like, you know, you violated the rules, basically. So fun fact. Yeah, it's because and look it up. KDP rules. It is there. I just think a lot of us, myself included, don't actually read the terms of service for most things, but it is there. Yeah.
Same. So what was your biggest learning curve in this process? It's like, I mean, I know you essentially started from scratch in this whole process. You learned a lot. But what was the thing that was like, if not the hardest to get through, the hardest to kind of wrap your mind around?
Honestly, my personal biggest obstacle and like hardest thing to overcome was just comparison. Just comparing myself to other people, whether that's like looking at their pre-orders or what they can afford. Like, I would love to do PR boxes. I'd love to do even just physical arcs for like readers who really support me, but I can't afford that. Just the comparison of like, oh, like they're doing better than me, or they can afford to, you know, do more than me, and just like jealous of that. And not in a like, I always want people to find like their success too. It's one of those things where it's like, I wish I could be there with you. I don't want to drag anyone down, but like, I'll be like, I wish we could both be here together. And so really trying to, and I know you asked about goals too. I don't really set goals anymore. And this is different for everybody. Like, do what works for you. Some people need that goal to keep like their fuel, keep that motivation and be disciplined. So if that's you, that's totally fine. This is my personal thing of I had to stop. Because then I would get disappointed and then I would like my motivation tank would like empty. I was like, you know, and I would talk to God, like whether you would, I don't, you know, everyone believes differently, but I personally believe in God. And so I'm like, Lord, I'm like, come on. I'm like, I know you could make my videos go viral. I know you could bring my books in front of people. And so I would pray. And then I just was like, you know, I feel like God just helped me to find joy in the act of creation. To be like, you know, it's not in my hands. I don't have control over algorithms. You can try your best and you can take all the classes and maybe it won't work for you for whatever reason, you know? So I was like, I can't change my circumstances. I can't change my health. I can't change my finances. So I should just write for the joy of it. And so just trying to find the joy in the creation, find the marketing that is the most joyful for me, even though I'm not a huge marketing fan, just find the methods and the platforms that I do enjoy the most and just trying to enjoy the process because that's all you can control is yourself and your attitude and your writing and just to continue write and you will naturally get better and hopefully, you know, increasing your chances of discoverability and for that lightning to hit that will like really make your career, you know.
I agree on the no goals thing. I think we talked about this like a few episodes ago, but I had to learn the fine line. I'm still learning between having like a hard goal, right? Of like, I have to write at least this many words a day. I have to have this completed by this date. We discussed, Brandon and I, like, notorious procrastinators. Having those, like, hard goals always led me to disappointment because, like, something would come up or I would, you know, be in more of a reading mood and I just didn't want to write or whatever. So knowing that other people have that experience too, like, goals just, they're good conceptually. Like, I want to be an author is a goal, right? Like, I'm going to work towards that. That doesn't have a hard deadline. That doesn't have a hard, you need to do this, that, and the other. It's kind of freeing in its own way. Just like take your time and trust the process. So yeah, I can totally relate to that.
For sure. My kind of motto I've been going by lately is like, goals are to guide us, not to define us. So
that's a good phrase. Yeah.
Not to let it get me down. And just to keep going. Like, I had a nano goal, and if I didn't make it, I'd be disappointed, but you keep going. Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You're not a bad author. You're not a bad writer, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's nice to hear that there's other people like that too. And I think it's all about finding what works for you.
Well, I want to move over to a little bit of a different topic. You said you wrote Bound to the Tyrant King is a historical romance. So talk to us a little bit about what kind of research you had to do for that. And if you had to do any other research for your other novels, it just sounds like that one probably had the most involved with it. But what did that look like? And how did you ensure that your work was like authentically representing Korean history and culture?
Yeah, definitely was the one by far that required the most research. Even Daughters of the Sun was like, it was a lot of things I already knew. So I just already had that knowledge. So I didn't need to like research it as much. And it's in it's like fantasy. So like there's a lot more leniency versus historical romance. Historical romance is definitely, there is still a lot of more leniency than like straight up historical fiction. But there's still also like, you know, you want to do justice to the history that you're representing. I did a ton of research. I feel like some of the biggest things I did was I researched a lot of like how Korean clothing changed, traditional clothing change, and the food that would be around at that time. Because like Korean food today versus Korean food back, you know, 500 years ago looks very different.
Yeah.
And so I spent a lot of time. I did really try hard to make sure my clothing was accurate. Some of like trying to make the food more leaning closer to how it used to be. It was a really hard thing to do because there were things I like disregarded for creative license, but like the bounds that I felt like, okay, I can like operate within and like this creative license was, I looked at basically Korean dramas. Okay, I'm like, what do Korean dramas themselves do? Do they disregard a lot of things? And for the historical romances specifically, they do, especially because like with Confucianism, for example, very big during the Joseon Dynasty. And there was no opportunity for like meet cutes because it was like women stay inside, like especially like noble women, upper class women, you would stay inside. If you ever left the house, you were going to be in like this boxed in litter that was carried by servants. Like not even like it had a sliding window, but like you were not allowed to like show your face. So like there would be no opportunity for like you to just meet in public or to touch. So, you know, you like got to kind of disregard certain aspects for the sake of like the story. But I did try to make sure my clothing was accurate and like the how courts I spent so much time looking at the government. I was like all the different positions. And then it was like, okay, now how do I take these words that just exist in Korean? Do I try and do like an English translation for certain, like I don't want it to be like they have to learn tons of vocabulary, but there's certain things I do want to like introduce to people and share part of the culture. So it was a lot of like, okay, what do I keep? What do I not for the sake of like people who, because I wanted people who had no experience with K-dramas, no experience with Korean culture to be able to enjoy it and understand it and not be overwhelmed. But I also wanted to honor it. So it was like a lot of research on the cultural and historical elements and government. And then also just trying to decide what works for the story and for the readers who are not used to it.
Yeah,
I don't know if I could ever write a historical fiction, romance, whatever, just because I feel like I already have a hard enough time keeping track of the fictional elements. I don't know if I could do the historical elements mixed in. So I admire everyone who can write in those genres, because I would also be like super afraid of people on the internet being like, you know, that's not accurate and things like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of those.
Yeah, I also like, I just made peace with the fact that I would make someone mad already. Like, yeah.
You have to.
Right.
I know, like, for example, the names of my two characters are very modern Korean names. I didn't use like the historical ones because I wanted ones that like, hey, like you might have a chance of being more familiar with this type of like, because they're more modern. So yeah, I'm like, but then so someone would be like, they would have never named that. They would have never had those names, you know? I'm like, yeah, but like it's historical romance too. Right? Yeah. It's that balance of like accuracy and accessibility. Thank you, Ash, for that word. That was the word I'm thinking about. You have to balance accuracy and accessibility for people. Mm-hmm. And the good news is historical romance is a lot more lenient. Like Bridgerton, for example, no one's looking for historical fiction readers.
Is that even historical romance. Does that count anymore as like historical? I mean, I know it's very much like, yeah, like I get it, but I don't even know if you can categorize that as historical.
It's the whole, okay, so you guys are very well aware of like the romanticy versus fantasy and romantic fantasy. That conversation I have learned recently via threads also happens in the historical fiction versus romance world of historical romance. Where is it? Which branches it under?
Right.
They have the exact same arguments over there. And so I think it's a spectrum. Then there's the two ends of the spectrum and you will lean more to the other. And Bridgerton is leaning to the romance. For sure. I would say personally, I would consider mine like smack in the middle. Like, and then one of my authors I look up to is Jun Her. And I believe she's Korean Canadian. And she writes historical fiction leaning, like where the romance is only like 10 to like 20% max of the book. And she it wants to be extremely accurate more than accessible per se. But I mean, she still does a great job where you can everyone can enjoy it, but she's definitely the historical fiction side. Bridgerton is like our romance side. And I feel like Bound to the Tiger King is right in like the middle of that. Yeah. It's a big conversation. Don't come at us, anyone who's listening to this. Okay. We can agree to disagree.
I think it is a really interesting, I mean, it is, it's so hard to pigeonhole stories nowadays. I have like a story idea when I'm done with my, if that ever happens, but like it's a Victorian historical horror, you know, and Victorian era is something like I have 2 degrees in history. I love research. I know when it gets to that point, I will be hardcore into the research field. But then you lose people if you put too much of that, unless it's a very clear like historical. But if you're wanting to lend more fantasy elements to it, or like Victorian era is very like spiritual into psychics and mediums and things like that, like you got to meet people where they're at. And it's been interesting reading Babel, because hers is a speculative fiction, but it's very much like has magic in it. But Arf Kuang does like fantastic job of like weaving actual historical fact of Oxford and its history with this like alternate universe in which the story takes place. So yeah, it's a balance and it's hard. And if anyone ever gets mad at someone for doing that, unless it's like completely outright like this is not okay, like we don't use this word or whatever, it's like just let it be and let it lie, and this person wrote it and that's good enough.
And I think it's like books can have a different purpose. Like, please do not go to historical romance or historical fantasy looking to be taught lessons and to critically analyze history. Like, yes. I really liked this historical event, but I wanted to add dragons. Okay, it's not that deep.
Right, exactly. No, totally.
Yeah.
It's always good to be respectful, but yeah, some people need to chill.
Agreed.
You summed up like all of the internet in one sentence.
Very, yeah, exactly.
All right, Ash, did you want to pick the next question from the list? I think we got a few good ones to choose from still, so.
We do. So I want to switch a little bit because I know we're going to run short on time in just a few minutes. So you are a contributor to the Blades for Hire anthology, as we have mentioned many times this episode before. So tell us a bit about your short story and what drew you to the project initially, aside from Brandon just being awesome.
Unfortunately, Brandon was mostly the answer to that.
Yes, same.
I had like seen other people participating in different types of anthologies, like, oh, that'd be cool to do, but like I don't really know how you get involved into that type of thing. I definitely do not want to be in charge of starting an anthology. Like, I love the idea, but I'm like, you do not want me planning. I am the creative person, not the business person. I barely handle my own publishing career by myself. I do not want to be responsible for anybody else. So I was like, Brandon, I like Brandon. He's so sweet. And I had talked to Brandon before. Like, so I would have considered us friends at that point when you had announced it. And so I was like, why not? And I love fantasy. I love Brandon. Let's do it. And that was basically how I got into that. Yeah, my short story. Also, side note, I feel like I need a different title for my short story. But currently, Don't even
talk to me about titles right now. I have no title yet, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, anyway.
I will say,
I understand the title battle.
If you do need a title help, I do have a reputation a little bit of being a title name person who can just like generate things. And I have read your story, so I feel I could give you good ones. I've even made your cover for it that no one's ever probably going to see. But
okay, perfect. I need, first of all, yes, and second of all, yes. So this sounds great.
But my short story is called The Final Mission. It's about a mercenary, basically, but who is also a father to all these kids he's adopted into, like, his orphanage. I feel like I shouldn't even call it an orphanage because he's not, like, adopting kids out. They're basically his adopted kids. But so he, to support them in this time of war, he is a mercenary and he goes and like handles bandits. He goes and fights the little skirmishes. He really doesn't have loyalty to any country, but he just wants to take care of his family. And so it's just talking about him, his journey as a mercenary and as a father, basically. And then there's like a little dragon cameo at one point because it is connected.
There's a big dragon cameo. In the best way. Like, I know, I'm not want to spoil it, but I was more than happy at the amount of dragon that was in the short story.
And it is very short. I guess percentage-wise, it's actually a big cameo because it is a very short story.
That's true.
But it is connected to another idea, that a book series that I've had planned since Throne of Anguish. Originally, I was supposed to work on this Korean historical fantasy that had like dragon riders, and it was about the Three Kingdoms era of Korea. And I wanted to do this trilogy after Throne of Anguish. And then, as we can see, a book and a novella and a short story later.
Change. Yeah.
I still have not done that, but it is currently, the hope is, subject to change though, that after I finish my current WIP, which I plan on querying, while that's querying, I plan on working on this trilogy that is connected to my short story. And yeah, so I'm really excited to share hopefully that soon as well. But yeah, it's a really fun short story. You get dragons, you get a cool dad with his, I don't even remember how many kids I gave him, like 9.
It was
a good
amount.
Yeah,
it was a good amount. But I think what you did well that a lot of people, well, I don't see when people write about family dynamics is like, you did such a great job of telling the audience that there is some tension, that there is like a history and there's more to the story than what you are telling us. But how everyone interacted was just so, wholesome is not the word because that lends itself to like this like flowery, like happy story. But everyone, like, obviously loved each other, and you did that in a way that wasn't so overt, and I think that's, like, a very hard skill to get right in writing, so I was, like, really impressed by that. It's, like, it was done in action rather than by telling, which I think a lot of newer authors tend to not do well, but yeah, I was really impressed, and it was, like, short, but your writing style is very succinct and simple, which as someone who's very flowery and like you both have read what I write, I like a lot of descriptions. It was good. It was like a good like that you can simplify, and she has done this, and it's okay to do this. So yeah, I was very impressed overall.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and to be fair, I want to say I wrote that after Crown of Sorrows, if I remember correctly. Like, I think Crown of Sorrows was with beta readers, and I wrote that short story. So I had technically written 2 whole books. So I didn't start, like, being really good at showing versus telling, because if you've read Throne of Anguish, it is a little bit of an issue. There was some telling versus showing issues. It was my first book. I still think it's good. I still think it's worth paying for.
Yes.
You can definitely see my improvement with each book. You can see that I've improved. Nice. So thank you so much. Yeah. That's really sweet to hear. I know I'm jealous of people who can write longer. Short comes really natural to me.
I wish it did for me sometimes.
I know. Different skills.
Different skills. That's right. Different.
Like longer, but it is a struggle sometimes for me. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, also can testify to your story is great. I've read it twice now, so I'm an expert on it, right? So yeah, it's really great. Also, thanks for the ego boost, guys, that I was the reason you signed up for the anthology. I mean, that's awesome. But
It's the truth.
It is the truth. Yeah. I was like, can I do this? Yeah, of course I can do this. But I'm also so down for like a grounds up, like we're doing this from scratch kind of thing. And you've like taken on a lot. Like you did this anthology the same time we started the podcast. So you, yeah, a lot on your plate.
Yeah, one of my brilliant ideas, right? But no, it's been a lot of fun. It keeps me busy. So at work, I'm not the head of a department, but I'm the only person in my department. So basically I have to run things and be on deadlines and everything. So planning just comes naturally to me now. But yeah.
Utilize that skill for the greater good.
Yeah, I tried. All right. Well, I think we can touch on this last question real quick, Bex. I know you said you're not a goals person. You don't really set like hard goals for your novels and stuff like that. But I do want to know, because we all kind of have, I'm sure, career ambitions as writers. What are some of your long-term goals or things you would just like to achieve? Or even if it's just as simple as like, I would like to write this Korean Dragon Rider story one day. What are some of your long-term goals as a writer?
Like Ash said, I like those kind of like almost nebulous goals. Like it's an overall goal, but I don't have a strict path to that goal. So I allow for life circumstances. So I do have a goal of, I would love to be trad published, but not for the reason I feel like I totally understand people who want it because it feels like validating. And I totally get that. And so I'm not like knocking if that's your motivation. It's really, I just want to get trad published because I think when you are a financially struggling indie author who cannot pay for everything, who cannot pay for ads, especially, it's like, I feel like ads is a big thing if you want to like really like up your career, you know, scale up to another level. And for the foreseeable future, we'll not be able to afford to do that. So my goal is like, in my mind, I'm like, I want to sacrifice a book to TradPub, like where I'm like, okay, like I'm obviously I enjoyed the story, but I'm okay if they ask for changes. So I'm going to sacrifice to TradPub in the hopes that it'll bring people under the same pen name and bring people to my indie books. But I would also just love the distribution that you could get from TradPub, because I think a lot of us want our books in physical stores and see it. So I actually have this habit where every time when I do leave the house, it's usually to go to the store to try and be a blessing and help to my family and do grocery shopping. And so I, whenever I go to like Walmart or Costco, it doesn't even matter if I am not buying a book, I'm not even near the book section, I will go to the book section and I will pray and ask God that my books will show up one day on these shelves. And so I, like, without fail, I do it every single time. So that is a goal. I would love to see one of my books on like a Walmart shelf. And the other goal would just be, I really do want to finish that Korean Dragon Rider trilogy. It feels so overwhelming that I've never written even a trilogy. I've done duologies, standalones. Most of my book ideas are standalones or duologies, but I really just want one trilogy. I don't know why. I just want it and I want to finish it. And it almost feels a little bit like it might end up being my Winds of Winter.
Though, mix it up. Like,
I'm going to be like, it's coming, guys. Okay, so coming. I actually wrote like a whole series of interconnected standalones, but it's coming. Okay, so I kind of wrote this other duology, but it's coming. And it's just going to be that for like my whole life.
Yeah.
I love that. Those are great goals. Nebulous, like you said, but also kind of concrete. Like, not the path, but like what you'd like. So
right.
That's awesome and great to hear.
Well, I'll just have another book to add to my waiting forever list, if that is the case, because I know ever since you mentioned the Korean Dragon Rider trilogy, I was like making a note of that because that sounds awesome. So
agreed.
It's okay. I've been waiting 13 years for Winds of Winter. I'm patient.
That is true.
You just developed that patience muscle. And so you're just prepared and be like, we're gonna be all wrinkled and old and you'll be like, so what about that Dragon Rider trilogy?
Well, Bex, I have one last question, and this is not book related. I want to know what your favorite K-drama is. Mine is Itaewon Class. That's my comfort go-to. So what is yours?
Side note, one thing I loved about Itaewon Class was it was probably like one of the first really good like foreigner inclusion.
Yeah, agreed.
Because Korea is very homogeneous country And yeah, they still very much, if you like don't look Korean, you're a foreigner. There's no way you're Korean. You obviously speak English. It's a lot of that. So I loved that they had this foreign looking character who was like Korean. He only spoke Korean. He didn't even speak English. And they looked to him and be like, talk to the foreign customer. You speak English, right? And he's like, no, I went to school in Korea. I speak Korean.
Yeah.
And so I loved really that. Good. That was really precious. I love Alchemy of Souls. I love Strong Girl Bongsoon because that was like one of my first ones. So it's like always going to have a special place in my heart. And then recently I've really enjoyed...
Watch that one yet.
It's definitely not a romance. It is like a kind of vigilante crime, but with boxers. And I also love the UFC. So I really loved watching that. So yeah, that's a recent one. So yeah, I love K-dramas. I can talk about K-dramas forever.
I know.
So I'm going to cut myself off.
Too much. Just wanted to ask, because we mentioned it a couple times, wanted to get the official answer. So
yeah,
I asked.
Well, I have never seen a K-drama, so I think I need to rectify that.
You know who to ask for recommendations.
Yeah, it sounds like I got some good ones already, so yeah.
I have a variety. I can give you romance. I can give you historical. I can give you historical romance. I can give you, like, crime. I can do it all.
Awesome. Well, it's good. I know who to go to then. All right, well, real quick, I just want to say thank you, Megan, for all the likes. Now, Bex, usually we just leave, like, a couple minutes to see if anyone in the chat who's still with us wants to ask any questions to you. So anyone in chat, Megan, anyone else who's there, if you have any questions for Bex, for us, just let us know, and we'll be here for a few more minutes. And then in the meantime, any closing thoughts, Ash, Bex, that you'd like to share with the audience before we sign off?
I think I have any today. Brandon, apologies. Oh, we have one in the chat. I don't even have to say anything. Okay, Megan asks, Bex, how are you so beautiful and talented and diligent?
Beautiful, thank you, Jesus, I guess. Talented, also God, and he helped me have these passions and the discipline to pursue them. And diligent, okay, I will say, like, a lot of people are like, wow, you really wrote a lot in like a year. And a big part of that is depression. I write to keep the depression away. Art is what I do. It's like the light, like the Lord is like, I'm gonna give you this thing and it's gonna keep the darkness at bay. And so I write, I draw, because it really helps with my mental health, because I'm in a really bad health spell at the moment. And so I'm pretty much like house ridden. I mostly live in this chair, in a recliner, in my bed, and that's most of my day because of the pain and the fatigue. So being able to write helps me that realm, and drawing helps me like feel like I'm doing something. Yeah.
Well, it looks like
humble answers.
We did get another question in chat. Who is your favorite character that you've written so far?
That is cruel to ask. How do I pick one? Because they're okay.
Like your children at this point.
I feel like the best I can give you is a top three. It's the best
okay,
I can do.
We'll roll with that.
We'll roll with the top three.
I have to include Valene, the FMC from Throne of Anguish, because, and people always say you're not supposed to do self-insert, but I feel like I did a good type of self-insert where I wanted to self-insert myself into like just a romantic situation type of fantasy dream. It was like, okay, I've experienced this pain. I think other people have experienced these pains. So I want to like share that with you via this character. And also her personality is a lot like mine, a bit of like, I want to save everybody type of personality that can lead to unhealthy decisions about yourself and just sharing that. So I love Aline. I also really love Bora and Sojun from Bound to the Tyrant King. I did not do self-insert completely this time, but just like little elements, because art is inspired by life. I love Bora because she is a kind woman. She's not a stabby FMC, but she is strong in her own way. And I really just love seeing her grow in confidence from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. I think she's like, not to toot my own horn, I think she's a great example of like strong in a different way and showing the different facets of like woman. And I really love her. And I just also love Sojun because he cracks me up. The man is like the king of a kingdom and he's like paranoid about birds. And it's just, I just love him so much. And so you guys should read that book. Yeah, that's the best I could do. I just love them all.
It's always fun when you can like laugh at your own humor in writing. I find that to be very difficult. So when I can do it, I feel like I've got something.
I feel like I have a very, it's weird. I feel like almost like I've got two personalities in my head of like, I have the imposter syndrome to keep me humble. But then at times I'm like, dang, this is good. I did good. That's hilarious.
I love it. That's the best feeling when you're like, this is a really good moment. And I'm going to allow myself to feel this way. Yeah, for sure.
I definitely have this. Yeah, I love to insert like humor, not in a slapstick way, but just in like, you dork. You dork. I love you, this character.
I think that's going to do it with the questions from chat. Thank you so much, Bex, for being our third guest on Quill and Query. It was so great to have you. You've been part of my book talk journey since like the very beginning, one of my very first book talk friends. So it was really nice to see you sign up and had a lot of fun talking about your many, many novels.
Thank you guys for having me. It was nice getting to chat face to face with Ash basically for the first time because we've like messaged each other a little bit before. Yeah. Yep. It's fun getting to talk to Brandon. It just feels like meeting up with friends at like over dinner or something. And it's really, I appreciate this community that we have in Blades for Hire. I've gotten to really grow closer with some other people. So thank you for having me. Thank you for your hard work. Sorry for the lighting. The sun was slowly going down this whole time. It's and I have transitioned into vampire form.
That's the perfect end. It's like, okay, when I go monochrome, then it's time to log off.
Thank you guys so much. It was a lot of fun. And I would love to chat another time where I can ask more questions back to you guys. And there's no time limit. For sure.
No, absolutely. I think we're all going to do the Blades for Hire like chat, I think, at one point to just like
I have
interest. So we'll have plenty of time and also just, message each other and ask you. So, thanks, Brandon, as always. And thanks, Bex. And have a good night, everybody.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, everyone, for joining. See you guys.